May I speak in the name of God, the lover, the beloved, and the love sharer.
Amen.
Al and I returned to Providence on Thursday evening, rather late, unfortunately, about 10 p.m. And as is the chaos in airports, although at Logan my experience has always been one of chaos, it's another couple of hours before you get through the electronic processes. We spent a month in the country. Well, it was a little over a month, but who's counting? And I have returned with a whole jumble of thoughts and emotions. I remember once upon a time, I couldn't wait to get back from holiday, to get back to see if everything was still standing. I have no such feelings today. I take that as a sign of my personal maturing. One of the words that kind of popped out to me as I was sitting yesterday thinking, trying to create enough space in my head to wonder about what on earth was I going to say to you this morning, the word habitat kind of jumped out at me, and I will say a little more about that. But after 5 days in London, catching up with friends and feasting on theatre, we were staying unusually in a yacht moored on the Thames. It's less Russian oligarch and more 007 James Bond circa 1982 in terms of its decor. After those 5 days, we returned to the region of southwest France, where we have holidayed on and off over some 40 years. If you picture Bordeaux, a city on the coast, southwest France, and you just draw a line eastwards through the famous viticulture landscapes of the Grand Cru Bordeaux wines, Saint-Emilion comes to mind, you come to the city of Bergerac, whose most famous son, Cyrano, is depicted in a hideously grotesque statue in the town square. But Bergerac is a very old town, and it lies on the banks of the Dordogne River. It's a town of quaint, half-timbered houses, cobbled streets, and it's the center of the next Appellation Control wine area from Bordeaux moving east, the region of Bergerac, which produces wonderful, crisp Sauvignon white and red wines, but is most especially famous for the sweet wines of Mont Basilac, the perfect accompaniment to the local cuisine, which is duck and duck and even more duck, sometimes interspersed with goose. It's the region of the famous foie gras. It's also the region where the cuisine incorporates a multiverse of fungi, which is gathered in the woodlands, including the famous and elusive black truffle. It's a very agricultural region. It's a region of vines and plum orchards, cornfields and sunflower fields. It's a region of ancient hilltop bastides, fortified villages which date back to the Hundred Years' War between England and France. They all have names that end in ac, as in Bergerac, a vestige of the ancient Occitan language of this part of southern France. In 1362, Eleanor of Poitiers brought the Duchy of Aquitaine as a dowry to her marriage with the English King Henry II. Aquitaine remained under English occupancy between 1362 and 1451. And today the region hosts a large English expat community. It's a region famous for its rugby prowess and the Bordeaux wine, so loved by the English that they christened it with its own name, claret. The novels of Martin Walker, centered on his hero Bruno, chef de police, in the small fictitious town of Saint-Denis, captures the essence of contemporary life in this region. And over the years, we stayed in many gîtes and farmhouses, barn conversions. We try a new one each year, and we enjoy tootling about the country lanes, spying out places where we've stayed before. We've learned that the traditional barn conversion that keeps its original structure is preferable to anything of a modern construction because the adaptations, and they were sorely tried this summer, ensure that with 3 feet thick stone walls, heavy terracotta roofs, the internal temperature remains fairly constant. Speaking of heat, we arrived, having just missed the heat wave in mid-June, to very pleasant temperatures, bright sunny days, before the onslaught of the most terrible heat wave in the middle of July. Beginning in Spain, over the course of 10 days, in the middle of July it moved, accompanied by temperatures of 100 and 106 degrees Fahrenheit, up through France into the British Isles, where it broke all recorded records. I have to say that 106 dry heat in the middle of the French countryside is infinitely preferable to the experience that we are having here this morning. But the air conditioning in the Great Hall, and it's my first experience of worshipping in this space, certainly makes it bearable. The local regional authorities of Aquitaine were so concerned about the heat that on the traditional Bastille Day, the French commemoration of the beginning of the revolution, all public gatherings outside were cancelled and all public fireworks displays were forbidden. With the exception of one evening, we were still, nevertheless, able to eat out on the loggia around 8 o'clock at night, most evenings dreaming of next year in Trondheim. Everywhere one is aware of the effects of climate change. The vines, until recently, regularly clipped of excess foliage to allow the fruit to ripen in the sun, are now bedecked in foliage in order to protect the fruit from the increasing severity of the sun. Forest fires are an ever-present danger. We awoke one morning to hazy, smoky skies as the winds had blown the smoke from the huge fire at Arcachon, some 80 miles on the coast, in our direction. It's eerie to experience the smell of smoke and not know whether its source is far away or closer by. And so back to this word habitat. The French use the word in ordinary speech to refer to simply the place where someone lives, the space, the geographic, the environmental and the relational, where the routines of daily life are carried out. In English, habitat carries the same meaning as it does in French, but it has a more technical application. We apply it more generally to describe non-human environments, say for plants or other living species. Habitat invokes an exploration of not so much location, but the patterns and the routines of day-to-day life. And how these interact and are challenged through the impact of the experience of stepping outside of one's normal habitat to be exposed to the influences that magically rework themselves when you find yourself in a completely different headspace. Now, I count myself extremely fortunate to be able to go away and to know that life in this parish continues uninterrupted by my absence. I can take a month to enter a completely different habitat, as in the emotional and intellectual headspace in which the different settings and the different pace of routine open up new perspectives. And I'm indebted to all of you, especially to Linda, to the church wardens, to the staff, without whom my month away, were it even possible, would certainly be more stressful and a worry-filled experience. And so I find myself standing here this morning somewhat at sea in the transition between habitats. A month away, coming back to the familiar, and yet it's somehow different also. We often have referred to this kind of experience as pilgrimage. We make a pilgrimage. We often think that making a pilgrimage is about arriving at a destination. But if you've ever made a pilgrimage, when you arrive at your destination, the thing that strikes you is that it's not about having arrived at all. It's about how you have been changed along the way. As human beings, we have a great need for stability. And it's easy to confuse stability with consistency of habit, predictability of events, and a general sense of being in control. These days, it's risky undertaking any kind of international travel. The scramble for the timely COVID test has been replaced by the increasing likelihood of last-minute flight cancellations. Two in our house party had their flights from Bergerac to London cancelled with 12 hours notice, and we had to scramble to rebook them on a different flight leaving from Bordeaux, which was an hour and a half away, in order for them to make their connections back to the US. For anyone embarking on any kind of travel today in the face of so many unforeseeable and uncontrollable factors, airline and airport chaos, lost luggage, pandemic risks, and all the inconveniences of climate pressures and the growing economic instabilities and the erosion of international security require a certain attitude of mind capable of facing the unforeseeable, weathering the unpredictable in the turn of events. Yet the risk to step outside one's normal habitat is worth it. But to say this is to make an easy mistake of assuming that to stay in the familiar and the somewhat predictable is necessarily risk-free. We know that it isn't. And in the readings this morning, those wonderful words about faith, hope is faith in the expectations of things unseen. And in Luke's gospel, Jesus counseling that life is full of the unforeseen. None of us can know at what time the thief will come or at what hour the master will return. To live as if we guard against the unforeseen eventualities is an illusion. And being able to withstand the challenges of the unexpected and the unforeseeable involves the quality of heart, stability. Stability is not staying in one place. Stability is a courageous attitude of heart that enables us to move into new and challenging experiences, knowing that whatever will confront us, we can be ready for it. Jesus reminds us that where your treasure is, there you will find your heart. If the capacity to take risks is not part of our treasure trove of experience, then fear will be the place where we find our heart. So I return to routine life, both with an anticipation of new challenges and opportunities that are yet just below the horizon. I'm also, if being honest, returning with more than a hint of reluctance to jump back too quickly into life as before. Not being anxious to get back to the pressures is, as I suggested at the beginning, a somewhat newish experience for me and a sign that I am continuing to grow in the depth of my maturity. I return thankful. Thankful for having had the possibility of stepping outside the familiar. I return with a sense of something having shifted and changed, although I don't quite understand yet what that might be. I return thankful for all of you who have made this experience easy and possible for me. You see, we may not know the hour that the thief will break in, or the hour of the master's return. Yet we live with faith that whatever happens, we will be ready because we are already equipped to deal with it, to open ourselves to less risk-averse ways of living, courageous frames of heart and mind. And Jesus warns us against being afraid. He reminds us that it is the Father's good pleasure to give us the kingdom. And in my experience, the kingdom comes in different forms, at different times, and in ways so unexpected that I could never have imagined. The trick is to allow the kingdom's coming. Amen.